Welcome to Patent Effect Podcast. So we are in the third season, and this episode will be in English, as you noticed that, because I have a very, very distinguished guest from United States, Charles Brumling. So I will introduce him and invite him to the stage to have a conversation with him. And we will talk about why the freedom to operate is important for the startups. So startups ecosystem are increasing in both in Turkish ecosystem, European ecosystem, you know, the United States ecosystem as well, of course, obviously. And we will talk about some of the major mistakes that the startups are doing in terms of in their growth stages in different countries. But of course, we will talk about in detail in different aspects of the freedom to operate analysis, freedom to operate perspective, which is very important for the deep tech startups, especially who are trying to go forward in different markets, in different territories. So that's why I'm really excited to talk with Charles today on that topic. Because he's also experienced in the startup ecosystem, so he will also mention about his story, what is the relationship with the startups and his own entrepreneur career as well. So I'm not taking too long on the introduction phase. I would like to say hello to Charles. Charles, how are you?
Hello, Mustafa. Just fine, thanks. And you?
I'm really fine. Good to having you in our podcast session. And the topic is also exciting, especially for the startups. So where are you now?
Back in New Jersey, just coming back from Prague. I'm a US and European citizen. And always exciting to come back to Europe. And now I'm just outside of New York City.
Super. So which state that you visited in Europe? Were you close to Berlin?
Yes, in the Czech Republic or Czechia.
But you didn't come to Berlin to visit me.
I know, even though you invited me and others invited me. But next time I will have to.
Maybe next time, but the weather is not, you know, going well with us. It's about minus 10 in Berlin. I think that in Prague, when you visited, the degree was also in the minus, right?
Yes.
It's amazing. So, Charles, thank you so much for joining our podcast session to talk about freedom to operate for the startups. But we know each other for a while, and I noticed that, but I didn't know that before. You told me that you are also angel investor and a part of New Jersey Angels, but of course you are an expert, an IP expert, patent expert, and US patent attorney, and you started on your IP law company Nanobiz. But you know, aligning with the topic of today, so you are acting as an angel investor in New Jersey Angels. And also you work with many, many of startups for decades. So this is the exciting part. And the much more exciting part is you created your own startup and exited. You sold your own startup. But I'm really curious about that story. How did you start on this startup journey?
And I think this makes this podcast more interesting also, is that both you and I have been on both sides, both on the entrepreneurial side and the services side. And it's really important because when a startup deals with service providers who are all trying to make some money off of their limited burn rate, we have to pick and choose. And so I, as an angel investor, I've seen, of course, many business plans and pitch decks and presentations and coached many startups. And we see the same mistakes over and over again. And that's part of the interest, right? If we can learn from other people's mistakes, we all still make mistakes, but we can make less and less critical ones. And I think your podcast help in the efficiency of a startup. We only have a chance to do so many startups. When we do a startup, it's investment also. We're investing our piece of our active life in that startup, hoping that that's the winner, just like an investor with money, an angel investor with money. In my own case, my father had invented molecular models, which most chemists have used in organic chemistry through Prentice Hall. And so I created a startup to help support those, to help Prentice Hall publisher, now Pearson Communication, to help provide molecular models for university laboratories, to help with the production. And so I had to learn the hard way, all the parts of wearing all the different hats in a startup, and then to find a buyer and exit that, and so that I could focus on the current business. One of the things, the recurring themes in this podcast will be the focus. Startups always have the struggle every day to retain focus. And if you're shifting direction somewhat, and we'll talk about some of the reasons to shift direction, then to refocus on the next step. And so that's one of the difficulties. You can only really work on one or two things at once. But I think it'll be exciting, right? And of course, you've seen the same thing on working on both sides, and we can compare stories on that.
Exactly. But besides your startup journey, you are also as a technical guy. So you completed your PhD, chemistry PhD in Texas University, and then you said you saw that it's not enough, and then you continue with the postdoc in the Colorado State University. What an admiring journey, Charles. How did you do that?
Well, so my father was a serial entrepreneur. He had over 40 U.S. patents on his own, not through companies. And so that's how I grew up, with a lab in the basement and machine shop and glass blowing and electronics bench and trying out new things. And for example, we were working on a salt substitute for one of the big food companies where my father was. And he would give me some chemicals to taste. Oh, does this taste salty? And he kept reassuring me, I know what I'm doing. I'm not poisoning you.
Super interesting.
So I went to a lot of school, and then I went to law school afterwards. But it's the combinations. My father was always interested in the intersection between traditional disciplines. And every entrepreneur has to do this in wearing multiple hats. If you're a scientist, an engineer, you still have to wear a business hat, right? And we'll cover some of the legal things as well. When I went from science to law, this was one of the more difficult transitions. As a scientist or engineer, you're trying to find the one truth, and you experiment until you find it. As a lawyer, there's lawyers representing both sides. And so you are less interested in coming to one conclusion. You're interested in protecting your client. And that's a very different way of thinking. And in today's podcast, we'll talk about some of those, especially in a startup, in a large multinational corporation or MNC, you have different departments, and each one can focus on their part. The legal department can focus on risk reduction for the company. The R&D department can focus on creating new ideas that have some applicability to the company. But in a startup, you have to think both ways. You only have so much bandwidth, not just money, but just as important, time. And so we'll cover how to think about both ways, basically a risk-benefit analysis and trying to think out of the box. If we were a scientist, how do we think about, you don't have to know all the legal answers or business answers, but you should at least be aware of them so you can put them into your plan.
Exactly. So you said the important keyword, the plan, the commercialization plan of a startup. So the most exciting one, to see the tractions, to be in the market, to sell their products, even if it is a software or component, the hardware. It doesn't matter. The startups have to sell their product to be successful in the market. But of course, most of the time, the startups are looking for holding a patent to protect their own products. but they are mostly missing out the infringement risk of the other patent holders in the target market, which they launched their product. So I have lots of stories that they had to exit out the important markets because of this infringement risk, because of, you know, trying to fight on the court. So I can say that most of the startups are not familiar with freedom to operate before they launch. Even, you know, the European Commission is supporting the startups with free money in terms of, you know, the funding opportunity within the European Innovation Council. The X name is the SME instrument. So the European Commission is also asking for startups in their proposals, please add a report which includes the freedom to operate in Europe. So I think we can start with the main definition of the freedom to operate. What does it mean, and why is important for the startups as a second step?
That's an excellent place to start. And we'll look at both sides, the risk and also building valuation and why it's important for a company. So I think it's great that the push for startups is now going beyond just, oh, file some patents on your invention and to include this extremely important part. So freedom to operate, or sometimes called freedom to practice, or abbreviated FTO or FTP, kind of legalistically, it's the ability of your company to develop, make, and market products without legal liabilities to third parties like patent owners. But let's get more kind of direct. It's human nature to think that we have come up with ideas on our own. But most of innovation in this world are improvements or combinations of things that's happened before in the last few thousand years with billions of people around the world. And how to really separate in our mind what really is new or novel and what is from others. And from others, there's two parts, what we call the public domain, what is not covered by a legal form of intellectual property or copyright, intellectual property or contract, and then what we can use, which is most of the things. So when we look at freedom to operate, most of it's based on intellectual property, patents, copyright, trademark, and some others like artist rights. And when we, let's say, file a patent application, we create a fence around what is our invention, what is new and not obvious, compared to what is in the public domain. And we have to, when we come up with when we have a startup and we have to look at what we are selling and see how that compares to what's inside the fence of a valid patent. And we'll go into those. Now, what is the effect of infringement? If you infringe, that means that you are making, selling, importing or exporting, using, getting others to, inducing others to do one of those, of a invention that is covered by a current patent or other intellectual property. And if you do that, the other company can come after you and basically shut you down. And a startup can't afford that. And so how do we avoid that? Right? But on the other hand, you can do the same to others. Now, a startup doesn't have the money to go to the courts and really enforce that for patents, maybe for some, you know, for copyright or trademark.
In that point, you said that the startup who infringed a kind of patent, they need to shut down in the court. The result of the court decision. But you said that the startups cannot afford the court costs, right? Cost of the courts, if they want to fight in the infringement case. So this is the this is the important part that startups cannot afford.
that's one of the critical differences in this podcast compared to the standard freedom to operate presentation you may hear from large law firms or large companies. But how to deal with it? There's two ways to deal with it. One is you have to look in the future. That goes back to the plan that you described. In building valuation for your startup, you're not focused on what you are going to do. You're focusing on what your customers are going to do, what your exit partner or go-to-market partners are going to do. So there's a huge lever. A big company that would, or bigger company that would acquire your startup, needs intellectual property in order to enforce their competitive barrier against their competitors. And that's the value that you're building. Like the current value, it's sort of an artificial value. Oh, you tell investors, I have a few patents, and so you should pay me this many million euro, investment. But it's not real, because it takes €1 million, for example, to enforce a patent, and you don't have that in your burn rate, and you don't have that focus of time away from building your company to get involved in the courts. Other types of intellectual property, a trademark, for example, is much easier to enforce. And those are some of the easy ways in the early stages of a startup to protect your brand. But patents, the focus of your technology will not be. And we'll go in depth on that.
This is all of the enforcement issue, by the way. Of course, we will talk this concept. So, yeah. But what about the other factors that can help the startups to understand freedom to operate in a simple way? So maybe they are holding some of the patents as a fence or wall to protect from the competitors. But what will be happen when they decide to launch a product, commercialize a product in a particular territory, country? So what are the other factors they need to think about?
Perfect. So let's work backwards in time in your plan. So at the end, you would like to launch your version one of your product, and you will offer it for sale in a particular country or countries. And if it is infringing one of your competitors' patents, for example, they will then try to stop you from doing that. You will have had spent lots of money, much of your budget in sales and marketing and manufacturing. And then if you're stopped at that point, you're pretty much out of business, because you would have to then try to bring back your product, change it, and try to get around that. Or you would have to pay some large license fee. If in Europe, typically you have a mandatory license, but it could make your product uncompetitive from a price perspective. And so how to avoid that nasty surprise? So you work your way back and you plan for that. And when you look at a podcast from a large company perspective, you have what's called a freedom to operate opinion. That's a very expensive legal document that goes over how your product is different from the patents that are available. A startup can't afford to do that until the end. But in the meantime, you need to start planning before you invest your money in the sales and marketing and production. So you need to do some informal reviews of what intellectual property is near your invention, how to design around it, or how to partner, who to partner with to overcome those problems. And there's all of these things are plus and minus. If you listen to a law podcast, you only see the minuses, the risks, but there are opportunities. As you're looking for what you're infringing, you're finding potential customers, potential competitors, potential go-to-market partners. A startup, one of the ways to build a startup is through leveraging off of others. You don't have to do everything yourself. And so some may be willing and some may not, but that's part of your journey.
That's a good point that you indicated that because you are coming from this business, also you are acting as an angel. So the startups have a leverage in different markets in terms of especially in the beginning of go-to-market strategy. Of course, it is so risky if they infringe some of the others' patents. But of course, it is important that before going to this market, they can notice, they can discover this patent owner, and then they can go to them, knock the door, and then they can maybe the license this patent to use in that their product as a one of the component. And it is also about managing your costs. So for example, if you don't know, if you are not aware of this patent, of course you have to be shut down in that market, or you have to go back. Or if you know before launching your product, there's a chance to have a partnership instead of going back, right? So every patents are that you need to be aware in your product is not a negative aspect. Sometimes it can be a positive aspect in terms of the chance of creating a new collaborations. What do you think about it?
That's right. Now, in collaborations, you have your own issues, whether you have a joint development agreement or collaboration, you have to always watch for contamination. Startups often get too focused on certain legal issues. Oh, if we talk to you, you have to sign an NDA, even if you're an angel. How is someone supposed to invest in you if they don't know anything about you, right? And so that's, you'll have these problems. But on the other hand, you have to be very careful about contamination. If you take in confidential information from a partner and then put that into a patent application, you may run into these types of freedom to operate issues. It's not formally called freedom to operate, but it has the same effect. So as a startup, you can't be too focused on what is exactly named this or that. You have to focus on the effect. You have to be able to sell your product without other companies coming or other, you know, ex-employees coming to you and saying, oh, you know, you have this contract with me, or I have this patent, or I should be an inventor on your application. In an example, let's say you have a sensor for COVID and you partner with a biotechnology company that has a particular molecule to recognize that strain of COVID. And that's perfect. You can handle the other parts of the sensor. You're not a biotechnology company, you're a sensor company, and you can leverage the expertise of that other company. When working with universities, it's a little trickier because of the other restrictions that universities have and the mission for universities to promote their inventions to the world. So it's easier with private companies than universities. But that would be an example of a collaboration.
On that topic, I have an example that I want to share with our audience or listeners as a case study. But it's not good ending. One of the Turkish startup about 5 years ago, they grew in Turkey. They were a software as a service company, basically, and a software dependent. So they were selling a subscription of movie tickets monthly. So they grew very large in Turkey, and then they decided to go to United States. But there was a problem. As soon as they launched their business in United States, they have only one competitor, and then this competitor has only one patent. And then they sued them by the reason of their infringing this payment algorithm, which is indicated in that patent. One competitor, one patent, and you are out of the United States. So this story is telling so much thing as a, you know, the takeaway, as a learning point. Especially big markets like United States, you need to be much more careful about infringing the others' patents, because startups can also have sued the other startups. So it doesn't need to be a corporate or, you know, the other big companies, giants. So startups and startup can also fight on the court, but the cost of the courts are really, really, really high to be afforded by a startup. That's why they cannot stand in the United States. So they had to go back. What do you think about that?
So several things come from that. One is freedom to operate is based on the country. So if you have a patent or a copyright, you have to file in individual countries. And most companies will not file intellectual property in every country. If you have a common, if you have, let's say, household goods like Unilever or Reckitt-Benckiser, they will file trademarks in pretty much every country. That's not so expensive, but filing patents in every country will be. But the patents typically will be filed in the big countries. Now, software, especially the U.S. has a method to doing, allows method of doing business patents. So if you are doing software, the United States will be the main country to pay attention to for patents. The other item is size. You can't get blood from a stone. So many times you won't get sued as a little company while you're just developing something. Sometimes, you know, companies will try to stop your research, but in general, until you're ready to sell something, you may not even know that you're about to get sued. But the threat is critical for you as a startup. If you try to offer to sell something or offer to partner with someone and a competitor has a lawyer send a nasty note to your potential customer or partner saying that they believe that you, the startup, are infringing their, likely infringing their patent. They don't have to prove it yet. Those customers usually will run away. And so you can't afford that. So paying attention ahead of time. And if somebody you're working with has a note like that, and they let you know, then you have to deal with it before moving on with that customer or anyone else.
That's true. That's true. So maybe I can say that in general aspect that you all shared with us until now, our audience understood that the freedom to operate is important for the startups. But the question is, from a startup perspective, when do I need to care about, you know, thinking of not infringing others? Is it at the beginning of my early stage prototyping or just before the launching the product or at the middle of my journey? So what can we say that in the timeline of this product development and commercialization journey of a startup? Is there any milestones or, you know, the important time blocks that startups need to think about freedom to operate?
So the short answer is always, but we view a startup as a three-legged stool. You have your business, you have your technology, and you have your legal issues, and you have to deal with them all. Now, you will ramp up on how much effort you put into it. But at the beginning, and it has opportunities. So as you need to search all of these at the same time. As you're putting your business plan together, and every business plan will change over time, you need to pay attention, right? Any startup was one of the classic mistakes who comes to you and says, we have no competitors. They have no clue. Don't invest in them. They have no respect, right? Or all we need is a certain percentage of the market and we'll be successful, right? These are the signs of someone who is just starting out and has no experience. So when you're putting your business plan together, you need to know who are your potential competitors. They might be your exit partner, you know, who you're going to exit to. Think about not what you're creating now, but what would an exit partner or buyer do with your company? Don't think of only your invention. Think about what your competitors could do. So there's two potential exits. Everybody thinks, oh, the buyer of my startup is going to be who's going to use and sell my product. Many times the buyer on a tech-heavy IP-protected company is buying you so that you don't compete with their existing product. And they might shelve your your IP. It's not exciting to a tech entrepreneur, but it can be very lucrative. Sometimes, if you sue a company for infringing your intellectual property, it's cheaper for them to buy your company than to pay the lawyers and the potential exit. So you need to think in a broader perspective. One is about how my company could get shut down at the time I'm trying to sell my first product. And the other is, what are other ways I can make money? Why do we file patents? They're barriers to competition. Why do we file trademarks or other intellectual property? There's value in both the enforcement and the defense. And the buyer of your company will need to do that and will have the budget to do that, to enforce it and to file in more countries. But always think about it. And so at the beginning, it'll give you ideas also on how to expand and focus your own patent filings. Your patent filing should be think about it as a barrier to competitors, to yourself, and for the buyer of your company. So you apply for other write claims for other applications than just your own. Ways to get it. Think about freedom to operate against, in the other direction. If somebody was trying to design around your patents, what would be the ways they would try to do that and try to cover those as well?
Before moving forward, Charles, startups also asking us, how can I challenge with these patent issues in different countries? So they are saying that I'm just a startup. I don't have enough power. I know the importance of the patents. I know the importance of not infringing the others. But they are showing me some examples that, look at the Apple. They infringed the some of the patents of Massimo, and then now they're abundant from selling the latest version of Apple Watch. Of course, it's canceled, but even Apple is struggling with patent infringements. The startups asking that, how can I handle it? What are the challenges that I need to take care, in navigating my commercialization journey in different countries? I think that's a really big stone as a question. So that needs to be answered carefully. What do you think about it?
The Apple Watch is a perfect example. You have a particularly tenacious entrepreneur who has managed to get enough funding to fight Apple, and can get the funding because there's a lot of money involved. I mean, the money that Apple lost in just the holdup on the sales of their watches, technology, that electronics has a limited lifespan. And there'll be another version coming out in the next 18-month cycle. So that cost them dearly. And they had made an offer to settle, and it was not enough, right? But where's a startup come in, right? What happens to Apple generally can happen to you, but the amounts of money will be less, but it'll have a larger effect on you. This is not going to shut down Apple. It will reduce their share price for a little while, but it could shut down a startup very easily. And you don't even have to be involved in multi-million-dollar litigation like this one. Just as we talked about, the threat is critical. So when you're looking at countries around the world, and it comes back to the plan you mentioned again, which countries are you planning to file in? Is your particular technology highly patented or not? So electronics, communications, biotechnology are heavily patented areas. In some more traditional engineering areas, industrial production, you may have less patents. So it depends which area you work in and how much effort you have to spend on this. But it as part of your patent strategy, and be careful with the service providers. If you're working as a startup with a large law firm, little clients are not that important, as important to a big firm as the bigger clients. They may be pushing more for charging more hourly rate, hours. You have to always come back and focus. What are the needs of the startup and where to spend the limited budget? you have to start early on reviewing freedom to operate. Which countries? Who are the competitors? How are you going to design around or work with whoever you find that is patenting in your area? Which patents are there and when are they going to expire? After they expire, unless there's additional patents filed around it on improvements on those inventions, you could plan to then move into that area. Which countries are not don't have any patents? But you have to remember, again, if where are you going to manufacture? If you let's say you're manufacturing in China and selling in Europe, if there's a patent in China, that can be used against you. The watch your agreements as well. So that's part of your plan. Who are you going to partner with, and who are you going to avoid to minimize contamination? If you're going to work on a joint development, or if you're taking government money, sometimes when you're taking a government grant, the government gets rights to that invention. So if you're working in areas, for example, in defense or homeland security, defense contractors could be making your invention without asking you under those rights. So which rights can you keep for yourself? And the other part is focusing. What are the choke points in your particular industry, and are you patenting around those choke points? And then do you have rights outside of those choke points so that you and your customers can practice that invention? So it's not just you. Let's say you're manufacturing a particular tool and you're worried about the patents claims in the countries where you're manufacturing that tool, but then you're selling that tool to customers and there may be patents on the use of that tool, and your customers may be in other countries. So you have to watch all of them.
So it means that if the startup is working on a crowded area in terms of the patent numbers, patent density, so they need to be more careful than the others, of course. But if I'm a startup that I discovered some patents that can be I am infringing, so should I take care of which country they are producing it and which country they are storing it, in which country they are selling it? So sometimes the startups can be confused about which points legally are important to discover, to realize. You mentioned that if it is produced in China but selling in the United States, so what does it mean for the startup if they have the patent, if they've discovered the patent? So how they can navigate on the patent document and also in the market to realize what is the effect of this patent in different territories?
So let's look at that in both directions. So from creating your startup, you mentioned an important thing in the crowded space. If you're going to invest part of your life into that startup and you have a space that's not crowded, that will reduce the budget that you have to plan for intellectual property and freedom to operate. If you have an area that's in a crowded space, you have to focus your business plan on a very narrow area, hopefully a choke point, where you can create the largest leverage of your value of your company so that a buyer, an MNC, will pay lots of money for you. And you can focus on that particular area, and hopefully the buyer can worry about all the other parts, like the biotech example. The other part is you have to watch for every time you're going to want to sell, the buyer will want a indemnification from you that you are not knowingly infringing any valid patent or other intellectual property of others. You cannot know for certain because you can only spend so much in looking around. And the problem is, as a startup, your indemnification has no value to an MNC. If you cost them 100 million euros, what are they going to get from you? You know, a few thousand, right? So this is another barrier for working with MNCs. If you're in a crowded space, then they have to do their own freedom to operate at their expense. And they still will be, you know, worried about that risk. So the now on the other side, on the starting from the end, an investor, when you go for money, asking for money from an angel or venture capital investor, they want to know what you're going to use your money for. So you have to show the budget for Freedom to Operate, along with the other things you'll be doing, based on how crowded your space is. And you'll have to give them some. Many investors are not so savvy on Freedom to Operate, but if you show them that you're paying attention, just like the European Union example that you gave, that will distinguish you from the other companies who are trying to raise money from the same investors. So it'll show that you're more savvy and that you're reducing their risk. Investors, corporate partners, they all want to reduce their risk. That's why you have a startup, because the further along you are, the more you reduce their risk and the higher your valuation. This is part of that equation.
Exactly. The investors are especially investing on the deep tech startups. They're looking for to get the real answer from the startups. Are we swimming in a safe zone? Are we swimming in a blue ocean in terms of the patent infringement? So it is important to hold a important patents for a startup in view of the venture capital. Also, the venture capital is caring about if you don't have a patent. Of course, you don't need to infringe anybody in the different markets. So I am putting my money on your company. So I don't want to struggle with infringement case in the court.
That's a perfect example, right? So if you are out in the ocean, you never know. There could be the unusual shark that comes by and takes a bite out of you. But if you're not even looking, sooner or later, you will get eaten by something.
But I'm thinking that it's when I realize the topics that we discuss, the main point in the point of startups is having a general knowledge, general awareness of the IP issues, right? So if you don't know how to find the patents in the database, how can you know which patents are available in the market and which possible patents that you are infringing? So I think that this is also all starting with the general awareness of IP awareness of startups, right? So, having the capacity of playing with the patent databases, the reading the bibliographic information of the patents. Of course, you don't need to an expert. There are experts like us or others. So, but I believe that every startups are able to read the patent documents. Need to have a capacity of searching the patents, finding the right patents. Roughly, do you agree with me?
Yes. Now you're a fairly unusual service provider because you've been on the other side. The trouble is many times a service provider does not know your business and you don't know the all the search details and knowledge management details of the intellectual property service provider as a startup. So the question is, where do you start? So some practical things. We start with what's called a concept table. Think about what your invention is inside the fence we described, and then think about your competitors. In your plan, and it can be your pitch deck, for example, or your pitch deck will summarize it. Who are your competitors? That's part of your concept table. You're going to watch what your competitors are doing, not in great detail, because you don't want the tail of your competitors to wag the dog of your company, of your startup. But just generally, what are the important concepts that drive your invention, both the innovative ones and the other parts that are known in the public domain? So you can track those. The patent offices around the world are very good in categorizing technology by what they call classes, patent classes and subclasses. And especially if your industry has been around for a while, and you can follow that subclass of your particular industry to get a feel of what people are doing around the world. The other part is keep track of your contracts. Every time you sign a contract, you should keep it, know it when it expires, if it has something to do with your innovation area, avoid what's called contamination, taking in information from others. Every time you partner or you get a grant, watch for any intellectual property provisions that give rights to others. If you're filing a patent application, think of both ways, right? So if you're going to be the competitor and another company, big or small, ideally big, will have to worry about your patent. That brings adds value to your company. So, and while you're doing it, think ahead. Not just now and how we're going to launch our first version one product, but how would a partner or a customer use what we're selling or the intellectual property? Sometimes it's not tied to what you're selling. Sometimes the intellectual property you're creating has an unknown effect in the future on some other industry. And you can build value from that. So these are some of the things to think along the way and some of the ways on which to do that.
So we also talked the importance of FTO in the investment procedures, but how about the funding opportunities? I'm not familiar with the United States ecosystem in terms of the funding for the startups, but the governmental organizations are caring about the FTO for the startups before granting them with the money?
It depends on what stage. Sometimes a later stage, like a Food and Drug Administration, FDA, or NIH, even more, National Institute of Health, grant. If you have a phase two or three, they may pay more attention to it. Early stage, usually not. It's like with companies with stage gate. The further along you get, the more attention they pay to this. But we have some government grants. CRADA would be an example where the government gets rights in the work that's being funded by the government. So you have to watch for that effect. But I think the European Union is further along in this particular program you described.
Besides your comment for my question, you said that NIH. So it brings me 10 years ago. I was in the Washington DC in NIH in the technology transfer offices to do my practical training for 2 months. So I remember my memories at NIH. By reviewing the invention disclosures, and I see so many molecules which are transformed into a product, you know, by licensing, by patent licensing. So, what the memories. Thank you for reminding me that moments.
And that's a great experience, right? And that's one of my advice to startups. When you're looking for service providers, look for someone with actual experience on the grant side, on the innovator or startup side. But when you're looking at a service provider who has gone straight from school to a law firm or search firm, they will not give you as much input into the practical side often. And so you have to do more work on your side to help guide them on what is critically important for funding and survival and partnering.
That's true. So they need to care about this expertise, of course. It's important because the ecosystem of the startups, you know, their lifestyle, their targets, their purpose, their business strategies are completely different than the corporates. So the strategies for the corporates cannot work for the startups. So the patent lawyers, IP lawyers, they need to care about, they need to understand their missions, their purposes, and of course, needs and obstacles. So it's really, really important. So it's not similar with working with the corporates.
The other part is lawyers get paid a very different way from anyone else, like consultants like yourself and myself. We are paid on results. They are paid on hours. As a startup, you have to define upfront what work you want done and how much it will cost. Otherwise, it's an open wallet, and you can't afford that. And so, like you said, it's time and money. I mean, as a startup, you return on investment is based on time. And if you can't, you have to spend some money. You can't do this type of work without any money, but you have to be judicious about how you spend it and how fast. And a lot of this you can do yourself, as we described. You can search the patent office, the European Patent Office, or the USPTO.gov, or Copyright Office, or Trademark Office, and you can start on your own. But don't do simple. You can start with simple keyword searches on Google, but don't rely on that. Yes, you look at what people are selling around the world, right? So one is to look at the intellectual property. The other look is to look at the products. Many pitch decks do not properly look at who are the competitors, both on the intellectual property side and on the product side. Who would be your potential customer, right? What are the products that you're selling against? Even though they're not exactly the same product, but they may solve the same problem. And that you can start with Google searches, hopefully advanced Google search rather than just the simple. And then you can tie them back and forth. If you find someone selling a product that solves the same product, look at what intellectual property they filed.
I totally agree because, as you said, that the most of the startups, even their deep tech startups, for their pitch decks, they are not including the critical patents of their competitors. They are just indicating the competitor names, maybe in a chart, and they are just comparing how they are having a better performance than the competitors. But I don't see any slides about, oh, okay, this is my competitor based in China. They have two patents granted in Europe and granted in United States. So in that part, we are different and we are not infringing their patents. So another competitor has no patents, but the third competitor is based in Germany. They have a US patent pending, EP granted. I don't see this kind of analysis. So they don't, even, you know, if startup is focusing on biotechnology, you know, the drug development or the advanced material, they're just showing how they are perfect against their competitors, but no patent comparison.
And in the startup, these are important for multiple reasons. One is freedom to operate, but the other is they're potential buyers, exits for you. And so let's, for example, you have the Chinese company, right? They may also want a sales division in Europe. And you might be, by acquiring you, they might also get your intellectual property and also a sales office in the European Union. And so these are all things that add to your valuation as a startup. And hopefully you can raise money with giving less of your company away with a higher valuation with these reasons.
Of course, higher valuation also means that strong patents. If you have a strong patents in your portfolio, it means that you have a higher valuation. So you will give a less amount of equity to the investor. I totally agree. So it is almost 55 minutes, Charles. Maybe before closing, we can talk about some advice to the startups, because I would like to conclude this conversation with some takeaways, some advice, tangible advice. Although we are talking about intangible assets, but tangible advice can be beneficial for the startups, even they are developing their technology in an early stage, or even if they are about to launch a product in different territories. What should we give advices in terms of freedom to operate?
All right. So I think have a plan, as you started this podcast with. In that plan, look at the different parts. In the short term, are you focusing on the right lower risk, less crowded space? Every time, like we do in consulting, if your project is too complicated, keep breaking it down into smaller parts until it is manageable. So the next part is the beginning part was what you just described, right? Oh, your valuation is based on patents, But what is the next step? You can build your valuation even further by paying attention to freedom to operate. And while you're doing that, look at what you're, use that in conjunction to finding your competitors, your potential exit partners, your potential go-to market partners. Way before you start producing your first product, think about the effect of intellectual property and freedom to operate on that product. Is it the right product? Do you have to partner for that product? Do you have to design around? Should you patent something to help protect not just offensively what you are going to, what product you're going to put into the market, but also how others would design around because of freedom to operate by you against them around your product? And do you have patent coverage on that? And then think about your exit. How would a larger buyer of your portfolio and your product deal with freedom to operate when there's a bigger target with deep pockets?
Yeah, 100% agree, Charles. I'm super excited to hear that advices, but of course, starting from the beginning of telling the importance of freedom to operate for the startups, you know, using the strategical tool, the using of the freedom to operate as a strategic tool, of course, and using FTO in the investment and funding opportunities as well. And also we talk about the average IP knowledge that the startups need to gain before they are or during their commercialization activities or their investment processes. So it was super nice to hear your comments and insights on that topic, Charles. Maybe I can ask if you have any final remarks before closing this podcast episode, because we are almost 1 hour.
Thank you, Mustafa. It's great to speak with you again. And this is not so difficult. If you are paying attention to it, there's experts like yourself that can help startups in this space. But start searching and think about beyond just simple keywords about patent classes and about competitors' names so that you can track them. It doesn't take so much time. And a lot of this you can start doing yourself. Don't just rely on others.
But it also it's important to ask the experienced, experts, IP experts to get advice, you know, just ask a simple question. So we are not a monster. So we can help you.
Well, that's critical, right? In every startups can't know everything, right? None of us can know everything. And you need to find people like yourself, right, that can are willing to offer you small amounts of expertise. If you try as a startup to do everything yourself, you will fail. But if you rely on big firms to do everything for you, you will also fail. You have to be the initiator, but you need little inputs of expertise from your advisory board, from experts, and a little bit will get you going a long way, and the rest you can leverage yourself.
Exactly. Sometimes asking small questions, quick questions, can be also, you know, the life saving. So don't be hesitated to ask any questions. So I am voluntarily giving so many mentoring sessions to the startups. So it is my passion to help the startups in the most of the topics of IP management. All right, Charles, thank you so much for this great interview, great conversation in our Patent Effect podcast. I hope we will continue to record some of the other topics together. Maybe targeting startups, maybe targeting corporates, or maybe targeting the universities. Thank you again for your valuable input, Charles.
I look forward to it. Thank you, Mustafa.
Thank you so much. So I can make the conclusion of our episodes. So dear my IP lovers, so we completed our episode today with Charles Brumling from Nanobiz from United States. We simply talked and discussed the importance of freedom to operate, especially for the startups in their development stage or in their commercialization stage, whatever they are focusing on or whatever they are working in different stages. So as you remember that, you can listen the other episodes, other English episodes of Patent Effect Podcast in Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts. So you can simply search English and Turkish episodes that we already publish in our channels. Also, you can follow us on YouTube channel. You can simply search Patent Effect on YouTube to get some other related IP information for our audiences. So thank you so much, and see you next time in our next episodes. Bye-bye.